Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randolph's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
Yes, Your Honor, we call Colleen Bayer.
You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in this action to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated. You can state and spell your name for the record, please.
Colleen Bayer, C-O-L-L-E-E-N, Bayer, B-E-Y-E-R.
Ms. Bayer, Sharon Randolph was your mom?
Yes.
Can you just give us some sense of how long you and your mom lived in Las Vegas?
Since 1978.
So you grew up in Las Vegas?
Yes.
Okay. Did your mom, during your childhood, was she married?
Yes.
Who was she married to?
Philippe Cosset.
Philippe?
Cosset.
Cosset? And then is that spelled, well, actually, you tell me. How is that spelled?
C-A-U-S-S-E. It's French.
Okay. What, do you know how long her marriage to Philippe was?
They were married in August of 79, and he passed away in June of 05.
So a number of years. Was he your biological dad?
No.
Did you kind of consider him, though, your father figure?
Yes.
You said he died in about June of 2005?
Yes.
During the time they were married, did they have a residence on Rancho Santa Fe, right?
Yes.
Was that the house you grew up in, or is that a house they got later?
That's a house they got later.
Okay. In 2005, though, and prior to that, they were living at that house?
Yes.
Okay. And after he died, did your mom stay in the house?
Yes, she came back to the house when he died.
Okay. And that house, did it belong to her sort of after his death?
Yes.
Are you aware of whether or not your mom inherited any money as a result of his death?
$100,000 life insurance and possibly a 401k.
Okay. So she would have gotten that money around June of 2005 or maybe into July of 2005?
Yes.
Okay. In the time period of June, July 2005, shortly after your stepdad's death, were you and your mom close?
After my father's death?
Right.
No, not at that time.
Okay. Did there come a point in time when you and your mom rekindled your relationship?
Yes.
When was that approximately?
January of 06.
Okay. And when you rekindle the relationship, did you become aware of a relationship that your mom was in?
Yes.
And who was the person she was involved with in January of 2006?
Thomas Randolph.
And do you see him in the courtroom today?
Yes.
Could you point to him and describe what he's wearing today?
He's right there. He's wearing a white shirt.
Your Honor, may the record reflect the witness has identified the defendant?
The record so reflects.
So you meet Mr. Randolph sometime in January 2006?
Yes.
At that time, was he living in the house with your mom?
Yes.
And during that time period, were you pregnant, or how many, you were living away with your own family, right?
Yes, I was pregnant.
You were pregnant, but did you already have another child?
I had Nicholas.
Okay, and you were married, living obviously separate from your mom.
Right.
Okay, so in January 2006, so about 6 months after, well, maybe a little more, 7 months after your stepdad dies, Mr. Randolph's living at the house with your mom on Rancho Santa Fe Drive.
Yes.
Do you know how it is that they met?
I heard it was through internet.
Okay. Now, during this period of now January of 2006, how often would you see your mom?
Often, four times a week at least.
Okay. Did you go over there during the daytime?
Yes.
And was your mom working at that time?
No.
What had she done to make a living prior to that?
Beautician.
Beautician, like hairstylist?
Yes.
Okay. And at some point she retires from that?
Yes.
Do you remember when that was?
No.
That's okay. So you go over, I think you said, three or four times a week?
Yes.
And is that to just spend time with your mom?
Yes.
You guys would talk and just spend the day together sometimes?
Go shopping, yes.
Okay. When your mom was first involved with Mr. Randolph, were you aware of any kind of activities they did?
When I first met them, he had a boat and a motorcycle.
Okay.
I think they were using those.
Do you remember if they went to concerts or heard music, went out to eat?
Yes, they went to go see a local lounge band quite often.
Okay, so they were out doing a lot of things.
Yes.
Do you remember them ever going on a cruise to Mexico?
Kind of. I mean, I heard about it. I don't remember the date.
Okay. Do you think that was early on in sort of the rekindling of the relationship with your mom, or what's your best estimate? Okay. Do you remember them putting in a pool at the residence?
Yes.
Do you remember when that was, or do you have any sense of that?
I don't remember the date.
Okay. When you were visiting your mom during those days, was Mr. Randolph home at the time?
Yes.
Did he work, or was he retired, or what was your understanding?
Retired.
On those occasions, did you ever notice whether or not he had any physical disabilities?
Sometimes he had back pains.
Okay. But he had a boat and a motorcycle and those types of things?
Yes.
Did his physical state change over the time that you knew him?
Seemed like he got worse.
Okay. How about their social activities? Did it seem like were they going out to all these activities and boating and doing things at the end, or?
It seemed to dwindle.
Okay. Maybe more at the beginning.
Yeah, more in the beginning.
When you were visiting them, do you remember Mr. Randolph ever bringing up the topic of life insurance?
Yes.
How frequently would he talk about life insurance?
Oh, well, quite frequently. I mean, I don't know exactly how many times, but...
Was this early on in the relationship?
Yes.
Before they're married?
I don't know about that.
Okay. But it was something that he brought up a lot?
I think so, in my opinion.
Okay. Something that he talked about maybe more than one time?
Yes.
More than five times?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you remember him talking about his and her urns?
Yes.
When was that?
That was early on.
When they're dating?
Yeah.
Okay. During this time period, which is about 2 years, right, from from 06 to your mom dies in 08. During this two-year period, were you aware that Mr. Randolph had another relationship?
Yes.
Did you actually talk to him about that relationship, and did he acknowledge it?
Yes.
Were you aware that there were times that he would leave your mom and go to this other person?
Yes.
How many times were you aware of that happening?
I can't give an exact number, but I would say more than five.
Okay. And does that mean, like, hey, I'm leaving for the weekend, or did he, like, pack up all of his stuff?
I'm not sure about packing up all of his stuff, but he would be gone for quite some time, a couple weeks.
Okay, and then he'd come back?
Right.
Okay. Did he, let me ask you this. When that happened, what was your mom's reaction emotionally?
She was very distraught and upset, crying.
Crying and upset. When did it tend to happen? When would he go?
Usually around the holidays or special occasions, like Valentine's or birthdays or things okay. like that.
And then he'd come back?
Yeah.
And your mom accepted him coming back on some level?
Yes.
Okay. When you talked to Mr. Randolph about this secondary relationship, how did he explain it to you? What did he tell you about it?
I don't recall.
Did he apologize for it?
Yes, he did apologize.
Did he ever promise, like, you know, this is it, I'm going to end it?
I don't remember a promise.
Were you aware that your mom and Mr. Randolph had a wedding ceremony on a Mexican cruise?
Not till later.
Okay, but you are now.
Yeah.
From your answer, it's obvious you weren't at that wedding ceremony.
No, I wasn't.
Okay. At some point later, they get married in the United States?
Yes.
Do you know when that was?
No, I don't.
Does March of 2007 sound approximately right, or do you just have no memory of it?
I don't remember.
Okay. And I guess from this answer as well, did you attend that wedding?
No. No, I did not.
Do you know anyone who went to that wedding?
No, I do not.
And do you know several of your mom's friends?
Yes, yes.
And do you know a single one who was at the wedding?
No, I don't.
Let me ask you this. Did your mom have an issue with gambling?
Yes.
How would you describe it?
She enjoyed going to the Santa Fe. She lived close. She was frequent there.
Okay. What did she like to play?
Video poker.
Okay. In your opinion, did it ever get to an unhealthy point or a point where, you know, she gambled maybe too much?
I think so.
And did you ever voice that concern to her?
Yes.
Do you think she, like, how much do you think she may have gambled in the, you know, last months of her life?
I don't know.
Okay. With the money that she inherited from your stepdad, do you have any sense of whether or not that was used for gambling?
My best guess is she used some of that for gambling, yes.
Okay. Quite a bit or just a little bit?
I'm not sure. She also liked to go out to eat and go to the movies
okay.
and shopping.
Did Mr. Randolph ever complain to you about your mom's gambling?
Yes.
And what did he say about it?
That she was just burning through money.
Did he seem upset by it?
Yes.
Did it seem like between the two of them and their household, was money tight or was money an issue, or did you have any impression of that?
I didn't have an impression of that.
Okay. Did you during this time period, ever meet someone by the name of Michael Miller?
Yes.
When was it, in relation to your mom's death, that you met him?
A few months before.
A few months before, so definitely in 2008?
Yes.
Where did you first meet him?
I don't recall.
Were you at your mom's house, or do you know?
Probably.
And who introduced you to him?
Probably my mother.
Okay. And what was your understanding of like, who he was or how he fit in?
I heard he was just a handyman. He was helping Randolph fix the patio cover.
In those last, in those months when you had been introduced to him and you were kind of coming over to your mom's a couple times a week, did you see Mr. Miller?
Yes.
What was he doing during those times?
Mostly I just saw him following Tommy around.
Okay. Like following him around the house?
Right. And around the house, outside, inside.
Okay.
They would go to Home Depot or something.
Were they sort of together moving around a lot?
Yes.
Were they having conversations that you were a part of?
No.
Did they ever, there's a room in the house that had drums in it. Were they ever in that room?
Did you say drums?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Was the door shut or what, you know?
The door was shut.
Okay. So they were having conversations that you and your mom couldn't hear?
Yes.
When you, what was your impression of Mr. Miller? Was he a loud person, a quiet person, or
very quiet?
Did he appear to be someone that had a lot of money?
No.
When he was over at the house, did you ever see him like working on like home improvement projects or anything like that?
I didn't see him actually do any work.
Okay. Did you ever hire him to come over to your house?
Don't think so.
Okay. When you would see him, did he ever participate in or be invited to stay for dinner or that kind of thing?
At my mother's house.
And so it was just like, hey, stay for dinner kind of thing, or?
Yes.
Yeah, at those dinners, would he be talkative or was he quiet? How would you describe him?
I thought he was quiet.
Do you remember shortly before your mom's death, she and Mr. Randolph traveling to Utah?
Yes.
What was your understanding of the purpose of that? Why were they going there?
To help his parents.
And was it your understanding that his family lived in Utah?
Yes.
And about how many days were they gone prior to her death?
I don't remember the exact number. A week.
Okay. Do you remember them heading back to Las Vegas?
Yes.
And what was your understanding of their travel plans?
That they were going to come back to Vegas and just stay for a couple of days and then head back to Utah Friday.
Okay, so they were going to come down, stay for a day or two, and then head back up to Utah?
Correct.
Did that make sense to you?
No.
Why not?
Because it's an extremely long drive, and Randolph always complained how it hurt his back to do the trip, and it didn't make sense to just stay for 2 days and then leave again when that Sunday was Mother's Day and I thought she was going to stay and spend it with me.
So when they're heading back from Utah and coming to Las Vegas, are you contacted by Mr. Randolph?
Yes.
Did he call you?
Yes.
What was his purpose in calling you?
He wanted to have dinner with the kids and my mom when they got back. They wanted to have dinner together.
Had he ever called you before to arrange a dinner with your mom, the kids, that kind of thing?
No.
This is the one and only time that happened? And did you go out to dinner?
Yes.
And is it the next night that your mom is killed?
I think so.
So you guys all go to dinner, and then this is part of their plan to be back for a couple days and then leave?
Yeah.
Okay. So you go to, where did you go to dinner on that night, if you remember?
Santa Fe, I think.
Okay. Somewhere close by?
Yeah.
On May the 8th, did you go over to your mom's house during the day?
Yes.
And was it just to visit, or why were you there?
I visited with her for a little bit, and then she was going to watch the baby for me so I could do a few errands.
Okay. So, and we talked about you being pregnant in 2006. So at this point in May of 08, you have two children, right?
Right.
And how old are they in May of 08?
Thomas was one. His birthday is in June. He was two in June, so he was almost two.
Almost two.
And Nicholas, 11, around 11.
When you went over on May the 8th, do you remember what time you would have gone over that day?
It was early morning, before noon, I think.
Okay. And did you have both children with you?
Nicholas was in school.
Okay, so you had just Thomas with you, and you, I think you said you were leaving him with your mom so you could run some errands?
Right.
Okay, do you go do that, you run errands?
Right.
Do you remember having a conversation with your mom on that day at all, during the day at her house?
I think that's the day when I came back and... she was upset.
When you say she was upset, how could you tell?
She seemed very anxious, and she was smoking a lot.
Was she crying?
A little bit.
What did she tell you about what was upsetting her?
That Randolph was talking about divorce over something about being married was...
just one approach real quick.
Yes.
So, Ms. Fire, I just want to talk a little bit about, not what she said yet, but like what, when you have this conversation with your mom on May the 8th, was it in the morning or was it in the afternoon?
Afternoon.
Okay.
Early afternoon.
And did it take place inside the house or outside the house?
Outside by the pool.
And to your knowledge...
Did you say outside by the pool?
Yes.
Okay. To your knowledge, was Mr. Randolph home at the time?
Yes, I assume he was sleeping in the bedroom.
Was there a reason why the conversation took place outside?
No.
You were just out there?
Right.
Okay. You mentioned that your mom was smoking. Was it a normal amount or was it different in this way?
Super fast.
Was that
she smoked outside, so that's probably why we were outside. She didn't smoke in the house.
Okay. The super fast, was that normal or is that an unusual habit for her at this point?
Unusual.
In your relationship with your mother, when you would see her historically smoke super fast, when did that occur, that behavior?
I think that's one of the few times I've seen her. My mom wasn't a huge smoker. Sometimes she would only smoke half.
Did you perceive her to be upset?
Yes.
Did you perceive her to be under stress?
Yes.
Could you, when she was talking, hear stress in her voice?
Yes.
You said she was crying. Did you see, like, tears in her eyes, or what did you see?
It looked like she was crying. Her eyes were red.
Okay. How was the rest of her body? Was she relaxed, or was she tensed up, or what was happening with her?
Oh. Well, she wouldn't sit down.
Was she pacing?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay.
While she was talking.
Okay. And what did she tell you was going on?
Judge, can I ask?
Yes.
She mentioned that Tommy felt he wasn't getting enough on his taxes by being married, and it was hurting his medication, his prescription, Medicare or something.
So
that effect.
Something about being married was costing him on taxes?
Yes.
Was there mention of divorce?
I think so.
Did you give an interview to the police way back in 2008 about what happened with your mom and Tommy?
Yes.
Would looking at that, I mean, it's been 15 years, help you refresh your recollection as to what was said?
No.
Do you remember exactly what she told you?
About... You mean outside?
Yeah.
No, I can't remember the exact words, but she was upset because he acted like the marriage just, it wasn't financially working for him.
Okay. And did you relay that? Did you tell that to the police? You remember?
I think so.
Okay. And so that was after your mom had died, you relayed that information to the police about this conversation on May 8th.
I think so.
Yeah, that the marriage wasn't working for him.
Right.
Financially. Did your mom in that conversation indicate that she wanted to get a divorce?
No.
It was him?
Yes.
Later, I assume you collect your child and you go home at some point that day?
Yes.
Do you ever hear from your mom again that night?
Well, I took Thomas back. I picked up Nicholas from school, and then I took Nicholas back over to my mother's house that afternoon so he could go swimming.
Okay. And was that sort of a regular activity with your children? They would swim at your mom's house?
For Nick, yeah.
For, yeah, obviously. And then at some point, do you leave your mom's house?
Yes, I just dropped him off.
So you leave Nicholas with your mom?
Correct.
And because he's a little older, so he's going to swim?
Correct.
And then you take Thomas and go home, right?
Yes, Thomas ended up being sick.
Okay, and he's the two-year-old?
Yeah, he was almost two.
Almost two. So Nicholas is with your mom, and he's swimming. Is that right?
Yep.
Was that a normal activity for your mom?
Yes.
And you go home with Thomas?
Yes.
And at some point, do you see your mom again?
Yes, she brought Nicholas back to me at 6 o'clock.
Okay, so at about 6 at night, your mom drops off Nicholas, who's been swimming.
Right.
When your mom drops off Nicholas, do you know whether or not she was with Mr. Randolph?
I don't think she was. I'm pretty sure she told me he was off with Miller and that she was in a hurry to get back home because they had a dinner reservation.
Okay. So when your mom drops off Nicholas, it's your impression that she was by herself, but she was headed back home.
Right. And then, yes.
Do you ever hear from her again that night?
Yes.
What time was that?
About 7:30.
Okay, and is that in person or by phone?
She called me on the phone to check on Thomas.
Okay. So she was just checking up on your youngest at that time because he wasn't feeling well earlier in the day?
Yes.
How is it that you learn of your mom's death?
Friday morning, a friend of mine named Tony called me and said she was watching the news and there was a shooting on Rancho Santa Fe and she knew that was my mother's street.
After you learned that, did you make a phone call?
Yes.
And just Margaret, can we clear up, she said Friday morning, what is the date on Friday?
May 9th. So, after you talk to your mom's friend, do you make a phone call?
Yes.
Who do you call?
I try to call my mom again. I've been trying to call her all morning.
Did you reach her?
No.
Who did you talk to?
I called Randolph next.
And did you have a conversation with him?
Yes.
What did you say?
I said, what did you do to my mother?
What did he say?
He said, Michael shot and killed your mother. And then he just hung up on me.
During the days after your mom's death, did you have any further conversations with Mr. Randolph?
I'm sorry, say again?
You said you had that conversation where he hangs up on you. Are there other conversations that you have with him in those days following your mom's death?
I think so. A few days after.
Okay.
I don't know how many.
Microphone, I can't hear you.
Okay, sorry.
Could you repeat what you just said?
Sure.
I'm sorry. I can hear you.
Okay.
I'm not sure how many days after that conversation that we spoke again. I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Did he ever have discussions with you about your mom's house and her property?
Yes.
What did he say in those discussions?
He said he didn't know what he wanted to do with the house yet.
Okay. Did he make any suggestions about it?
Yes, he said he could sell it or hold on to it because the market was down and wait till the market went up and then sell it, or he might move into it.
Did he tell you about the possibility of him getting involved with someone else?
Yes.
What did he say?
Don't be surprised if I, let's say, have a girlfriend sometime soon.
Okay. At some point after your mom dies, is a document delivered to you?
Yes.
And who, do you know how do you get that document?
You mean the envelope?
Yeah.
I think Floyd Wolf dropped it off.
Okay. And who is Floyd Wolf?
Alice Wolf's husband.
Okay. And then who is Alice Wolf?
Alice Wolf was one of my mom's bestest friends that she worked with.
Okay. So Alice's husband drops off an envelope to you.
Yes.
Do you remember how long after your mom died that this envelope gets dropped off?
It's just a couple days.
Okay. And what is in this envelope?
A will.
Your mom's will?
My mom's will, where she had written that she wanted to leave everything to me.
Okay. Did you ever contact Mr. Randolph and say, look, I have this will where my mom's indicating she wants to leave all of her house and everything to me?
No.
Did you have any further conversations with him ever about the will or your mom's wishes or the house, anything like that?
Say it again?
Did you ever have any further conversations or did you ever tell him about the fact that you had this will?
No.
Was there a point in time when he learned that you had this will and he had left phone messages for you?
Yes.
And how did that happen? How did he know to leave the messages or how did he know you had the will?
Because after I had filed the will, And I got a probate attorney and was able to access the house. And I was over there. And that's when Randolph came over and found out that the attorneys had given me the rights to the house.
Okay. Was he upset about that?
Oh, yes.
After that, did he ever call and leave messages for you?
Yes.
Numerous, one, two, how would you describe it?
Quite a few.
May I approach you on that?
Yes.
And I showed these to defense counsel on our last break. So I just want to show them to her. I don't think there's an objection to you.
Ms. Beyer, I'm showing you what's been marked as states. This is 306. This is 307. 308. And then this is 309. Do you recognize these documents as your mom's will and documents associated with her house and property?
Yes.
State moves to admit those exhibits, Your Honor.
Any objection to 306 to 309?
Yeah. Okay, you have to read it. Okay. Now I want to focus just on 309. Is that the document that was delivered to you by Alice Wolf's husband?
Yes.
With regard to 306, 307, and 308, did you ever see these documents until you were in probate court? Like before you were in probate court, I should say.
I think Randolph showed me this one just before my mom's funeral.
Okay, and that's what I want to talk about then. This is 308 for the record. So just before your mom's funeral, Mr. Randolph showed you 308?
Yes.
308?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that looks like a last will and testament, right? That's what the document says at the top.
Yes.
And it looks like it's dated in 2006, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, 309 is the one you get from the Wolfs, right?
Right.
And it looks like it's dated January 2007?
Yes.
Okay, so this one, the one you get from the Wolfs, comes after, right?
Yes.
306, when did you see that document?
I don't recall.
Okay, was it sometime,
I just don't recall.
You don't recall? That's okay. But you know it's part of the documentation of all the wills. Is that yes?
Yes.
Okay.
With regard to the phone messages, did you keep a recording of them?
Some of them.
And did you tell detectives that you kept a recording?
Yes.
Did the detectives ever come over and collect the recordings, the phone calls?
Yes.
How did they, this is 2008 technology, do you remember how he did it?
Nope.
Okay. Did you just play the messages and he took care of the recording?
I don't recall.
Okay. But you gave him access to the ones on your phone?
Yes.
Were the recordings that you gave the detective all of the ones you had or just the ones you'd saved?
I'm going to say all of them.
And, Your Honor, we've already given defense counsel a copy of this. This is state's proposed 305. I don't think there's an objection to it.
Any objection to 305?
There's not.
Okay, 305 will be more.
I could just have a full court's indulgence for the ones. The state, Your Honor, would move to admit 305 and publish.
305 has been admitted.
Okay. Thank you.
question line pin number 4209. We are conducting a recording of some cellular phone voicemail messages that were left on Colleen Beyer, C-O-L-L-E-N-B-E-Y-E-R, cellular phone. The recording is being made in reference to a continuing investigation involving the crime of murder with the deadly weapon, which occurred on 0508 of 2008 at approximately 2030 hours at 6517 Ranch of Santa Fe in Las Vegas, Nevada. This recording is being made at 5604 Angels Landing in Las Vegas at Mrs. Byers' residence. The date is 7-1 of 2008 at 1522 hours. If you'd go ahead and start the recording.
Except when they broke up the police case, they don't write me. I got shoes and clothes, stuff like that I was bringing home.
Detective D.O. Kelly, apostrophe K-E-L-L-E, YMP number 4209, dictating an addendum to some recorded voicemail messages and answering scene messages left by Thomas Randolph on the cellular phone and home phone of Colleen, C-O-L-L-E-E-N, Byer, B-E-Y-E-R. The phone messages range from oldest to newest. The date and time of those messages are not displayed. The following recording is of a message left on the house phone. The date and time of this recording is 7-1-08 at 15:38 hours.
There's a reference in the very first call to Mike, your husband, and music. Is his occupation or does he do something in music?
He's an audio engineer.
Okay. And Mr. Randolph talked about possibly investing in his business.
I guess so, but my husband works for the union. Okay. And he works contract gigs.
Okay.
He didn't have his own business.
I'm sorry?
It's not like we have a business.
Okay. But he did mention something about Mike's business music.
Yes.
Thing. Your mom, did she have a lot of jewelry?
Yes.
Was it fancy jewelry, expensive jewelry? How would you describe it?
She had both.
Both? May I approach her?
Yes.
I'm showing you what's marked as Sweet Scribbles 168.
Do you recognize those items as your mom's jewelry?
Yes.
State moves to admit 168.
Any objection to 168?
None at all.
168,
have you
a minute?
The jewelry that you said your mom had sort of a mixture of expensive jewelry and less expensive jewelry?
Yes.
Is it like 50-50, or what pieces did she have that you would describe as expensive?
She had a golden locket that had some pearls and turquoise on the front, and when you opened the locket, it had four photos of my grandfather, my grandmother, and my two uncles.
Okay. Any other particularly expensive piece?
A bangle bracelet, a chain with a large gold puffy heart.
Puffy heart?
Yes.
Okay.
A gold watch that was a solid gold watch, antique.
Anything else?
Earrings.
Okay. And then would the sort of the rest of it be just regular jewelry?
Costume jewelry, like a Christmas bracelet.
Sure.
Or a watch just to wear to work.
Okay. And in this, I'll go back if I could, Your Honor. I'm going to show you 168, which is laying out all the pieces of jewelry. Do you see
those more expensive items that you would have to pay off.
That looks like the gold watch. The gold bangle. Sorry, there's a. I recognize this looks like the gold watch, the gold bangle, real earrings, but that's obviously fake. Rhinestone.
So
costume. I don't see that locket though.
Okay, so you do see the watch, the bangles, and then maybe a pair or two of
some real gold earrings.
Real gold earrings on there.
Yeah, but a lot of this is junk, like costume jewelry.
Yeah, like there. I mean, not everybody.
Right.
Not everybody has millions of pieces of expensive jewelry. And your mom, how would you describe how she kept her house? I mean, was she really organized and everything put away or less
yeah,
put away?
Yeah, very clean and tidy.
Okay. How about her shoes? Did she, like, take off her shoes and leave them everywhere? Or was she neat and tidy even with her shoes and clothes?
Well, she didn't like shoes in the house, but we would put our shoes off to the side, away from the doorway,
okay,
but off to the side when you walk in.
In May of 08, did your mom have any mobility issues? Like, was she prone to falling? Did she have trouble with her hips or trip or anything like that?
Not that I know of, no.
How about with her vision? Did she have any issues with her vision at that time?
Not that I know of.
Okay. And then if your mom was going into the house, like through the garage, you know what I mean, like through that door.
Yeah.
What would happen with shoes at that point?
I think she'd take them off, leave them in the garage.
Okay. And then if she was going through the front door, what would be her habit?
There's a space off to the right, around the corner to put the shoes.
Okay. How about when she was going in the house through the garage? I assume you've come home from errands and going out to dinner and stuff like that with your mom on those occasions. When she would first go in the house through the garage, what would she do? Would she just walk right in, or?
If it's dark, she'd turn the light on.
Is there a light switch right there?
There's a light switch right there.
Where is it?
Pretty sure there's one right on the right side of the wall, and then the laundry, the washer and dryer were directly on the left side, and right there also was a light switch.
Okay. And you would come home with her occasionally at night and see her flip on the light?
Yes.
Lastly, I'm showing you what's Martha State's 288. Is that a photo of you and your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when that was taken?
Yeah, Nicholas took that. Gosh.
Like a year before or months before?
Oh, this was a long time ago.
So really
years
before her death.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
State
moves to admit 288.
Any objection to 288?
No.
No, you have any there.
I'll pass the witness.
And counsel approach. During this time, during this recess, you must not discuss or communicate with anyone, including fellow jurors, in any way regarding the case or its merits, either by voice, phone, email, text, internet, or other means of communication or social media. You must not read, watch, or listen to any news or media accounts or commentary about this case. You must not do any research, such as consulting dictionaries, using the internet, or using reference materials. You must not make any investigation, test, a theory of the case, recreating the aspect of the case, or in any other way investigate or learn about the case on your own. You must not form or express any opinion regarding this case that is biased against you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 12:15. We'll be in recess till 1:30.
Please rise for the jurors.
Should we cut? Oh, of course.
Okay.
35 years.
Okay. Ma'am, if you are excused for lunch, I'd like to remind you that you are under oath. Do not discuss your testimony with him. Okay? Okay, may the record reflect that we are outside the presence of our jury.
There needs to be some discussion in regards to the witnesses who are going to testify this afternoon.
Yes.
As to what they're... So, say, do you have a proper as to what they're going to testify to?
Sure. Just give me 1 second.
Okay.
There's a couple instances of back and forth conversations where the focus for us is the advice that that people gave her. So I want to first
the advice that people gave to Shannon.
Yes, based off the kind of conversations that are happening. So I'm just going to touch on these each conversation and just lay it out.
Okay, perfect.
Great. Okay. So Deirdre Marley is a friend of hers. She indicates that around March of 2006, she is. Her mood. She's observing that her mood is changing. She says that she's no longer. She's normally.
She's observing
happy.
Sharon's mood is changing.
Yes.
Okay.
But she's no longer happy and giddy, and that's normally her typical personality. And she says, I didn't see that gleam in her eye. And to her, she was left with the impression that Sharon was depressed. And she was asking her what was wrong, and she was indicating. She said that Tom said that if I didn't marry him, that he was going to leave her.
This is in 2006?
Yes. So this is before the Mexican ceremony.
Okay.
She had said that he was sleeping on the sofa and no longer would sleep with him. When she heard all of this...
And who's no longer sleeping with him?
Sharon is no longer sleeping with Tom.
Okay.
Tom is sleeping on a couch.
Okay.
She's sleeping in the bed and he doesn't want to. You'll hear Dietrich gives her advice. Sharon, you should really let him go. Right. She doesn't think it's a good study. She makes a suggestion to Sharon. Go to Mexico and go have some sort of like mock ceremony. Maybe that will kind of shut him up. And ultimately what happens is they go to Mexico and they have this ceremony. So that's one conversation.
Okay, well, we've got to do these one at a time.
Okay, so let's do that.
Okay, so in regards to that conversation, what's your position in regards to that?
2.5 years beforehand. Before the Mexico marriage,
we're going to hear what Deidre Marley says that Sharon said. And the Supreme Court said in Habish regarding state of mind, it has to be relevant to the crime charge. In Habish, they would try to argue that the man had died, Binion died of a drug overdose. And they brought out that Binion told his lawyer, if I end up dead in the next few days, you know, it's Sandy Murphy. That caused reversal. That's a problem. So what I don't understand what the state is saying. 2.5 years beforehand, Sharon, what does that have to do with this problem? That has to do with maybe they went to Mexico. If there was something that maybe happened in the cruise in Mexico 2.5 years beforehand. But this is just so far afield and there's no precedent.
So we have had courts and precedents that talk about in domestic relationships. The state of mind of people in a marriage is relevant. And one of the cases that we found My Honor, was this, I wasn't a party, I mean, no, 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 email, and I didn't review it, but we have an 11th Circuit case, U.S. v. Chokers, that talks about the fact that one member of this relationship wants a divorce, potentially taking all their money, is potentially what prompts another person to kill. I mean, the reality is why this is relevant is this relationship is not smooth at a lot of different junctures. And why this is significant is this is a situation at the beginning of the relationship where he is pressuring her to marry him. And she is upset over this, and ultimately that's what she does. We believe one of the motives in all this is he wanted to marry this woman, take out the life insurance, and ultimately get rid of her at the end when she's outlived her use. And that is our theory of the case. So the fact that before they go off to Mexico, she is explaining, I'm really upset because we're not intimate anymore. He's threatening to leave me.
And then a friend says, well, maybe do the Mexico thing. And that's, in fact, what they do, and the relationship goes on. It is relevant. It's relevant to figure out why they're even getting married in the first place. It is relevant to understand how much Mr. Randolph is really in it and how much he really wants to be with Sharon at the beginning and what's important to him. And so, you know, his statements are relevant and they're admissible admissions. But the fact is, this goes to her existing state of mind, her existing emotional state. And so I believe this conversation is incredibly relevant. Because you even have a friend recommending to her, Sharon, just be done with this guy. And yet she chooses not to do it. So that I think this is not a remote situation. And it is critical to understand how this relationship forms and how this marriage ultimately comes to be. And what both people are feeling at that time.
Well, I mean, here's the situation. I think what Deidre said is absolutely, I mean, she can absolutely testify. I told Sharon she needed to leave him. She can testify to Sharon's demeanor when she saw her. But a statement that Sharon made 2.5 years prior to when Sharon was murdered is not going to be considered relevant to her current state of mind in 2008. But Deidre can talk about anything she said. She can absolutely talk about anything that she observed. But Sharon's statements are not relevant to state of mind when they occurred 2.5 years before the murder.
Okay.
Could I also be heard on that? Just
yes.
Deidre Marley, they didn't even take a recorded statement from her. They didn't put her on in front of the grand jury. They didn't call her last night. I'll tell you why they want Deidre. Deidre knew a man named Joseph Matve, our expert. Deidre said that she had some information she told Mr. Matve because she knew Mr. Matve's wife. Mr. Matve put her in touch with Detective O'Kelly. And I think the state wants to muddy up the water with our experts, bringing our expert in. There's no relevance to that, so we want to make sure that the state stays away from Mr. Matve. Anything Mr. Matve would have said would be clearly hearsay. And so also, it seems very odd to me that this case has been going on for this many years, and once we notice Mr. Matve, all of a sudden, Deidre Marley becomes an important witness. She really doesn't have much to say at all. She did. We'd have heard about her in the last trial. We'd have heard about her in the grand jury, and they most certainly would have taken a recorded statement from her. So we'd ask that no mention of Mr. Matve come in. There is no relevance to that at all, just that he put them in touch.
I'd like to respond to that.
Okay.
I really appreciate that Mr. Warren has looked into the minds of me and Ms. Weckerly and understand why we do certain things, but the reality is this. I didn't try the last case, and I don't really care what witnesses we called the last time. This is our burden in this trial, and that's not one of the reasons why we're doing it. It can be a factor. If Mr. Matve testifies and she has information relating to Matve, we're free to relay that. But that's not the reason why we're doing this. This is just one conversation. I'd like to get to the other ones. Because
she's going to be allowed to testify in regards to her relationship with Sharon because she's Sharon's friend, so she can testify about that. The fact that she didn't testify in the last trial has absolutely no bearing on whether she'll be called today. In regards to Matve, she can't testify to anything he said because that's a hearsay statement. But if there's something that he says and you guys want to call her in your rebuttal case, I can't stop you from doing it.
So I've had a discussion about, and Mr. Tomczyk, about another conversation Deidre has with Sharon when she observes bruises on her body. Have you guys made a determination as to what you want to do with that?
I haven't had a chance to talk to him.
Okay. So one of the things that I was this morning kind of at least addressing with him is that one of the things that Deidre notices at one point while they're married is she comes in one day and she notices she has bruises on her body.
Okay, you got to stop saying she and tell me who
I'm
she
sorry.
Is because we're talking about Deidre and Sharon.
I apologize. Deidre notices Sharon has bruises on her body.
Okay.
She asks Sharon, how did you get those? And she says, Tommy and I were out on his boat. And he was speeding and he turned and I fell in the boat.
Okay.
Okay? her response, meaning Deidre's response to hearing that story, was, "Sharon, I believe he's trying to kill you." And she says, "Whatever you do, don't accept any food or beverages and turn your back on him." And she says, Sharon's response to that is, "Do you really think so?" And she says in response, "I really do." That is relevant, again, because of another warning that this same friend is making to her. What I don't want to do is, if you omit that middle portion, it could create the impression that there's a DV situation. And I'm not trying to suggest that. In my opinion, to eliminate the risk of an insinuation there was domestic violence, you have to bring in that context of, it's just an accident on the boat. But if they, because I can literally just go, "Hey, what did you observe? I observed bruises. What did you do? I think he's trying to kill you." That is a very different story that would be told than rather giving context. So in my opinion, to protect Mr. Randolph, it is appropriate to lay that background, not for the truth of the matter asserted, but to give context of to just why she's saying what she's saying.
Okay.
Your Honor, if I just heard that correctly, there was something on a boat that she fell over, and now the state is saying that Sharon said something, and this woman who didn't see it, didn't hear about it, or just only heard Sharon saying this, concludes, "Oh, this must be an attempted murder situation, and you should get out of it." This is a bad act. We should have litigated it before. Where's the clear and convincing evidence of it? There's absolutely nothing to this. And I, what I would tell the court is, some of these witnesses that are going to come up, they gossip, and when I say, I mean, they really just spend pages and pages saying, "I heard from this person, and then after, I heard from this person, and I talked to the hairdresser who told me this." And that's what we're getting into. This is not, what does this have to do with what happened in that house that night? Some kind of boating incident where now the state is saying that the evidence that something was awry is coming from a witness who saw some bruises? Even Sharon didn't say anything was wrong with it. Sharon just said, "Oh, you think so?" And now they're bringing this out. They're really muddying up the waters. And so I would ask that that be kept out. It's hearsay, and it's a bad act, and it is highly prejudicial, and the probative value is extraordinarily limited.
Well, I mean, it's not a bad act because it's absolutely not going to be insinuated in any way that Mr. Randolph committed a domestic violence. And I got to tell you, when Mr. Hammond first started speaking, that's exactly how I was like, seriously? We already litigated the bad acts. But based upon the fact that the testimony is that she fell in a boat, if this woman then gave her some form of advice, again, going back to the court's original ruling, this lady can testify to advice that she gave to Sharon, because she can testify to something that she said in relationship to Sharon and Mr. Randolph's relationship, which is absolutely an issue in this case. So that will be allowed because there is no insinuation that Mr. Randolph had a domestic violence against this woman. This witness is going to say, "Sharon said she fell on the boat."
Yes. Okay. The next conversation, time-wise, is a week before the murder. She states that she is on...
Who is she?
I apologize. I know.
It's okay.
It's okay. I apologize. Deidre states that a week before the murder, she is on her way home and she receives a phone call from Sharon. She says that she can hear in her voice that she sounds depressed. She says that Sharon told her, "Deidre, I'm not doing well. What's wrong? I need to get a divorce." And her response to that, meaning Deidre's response to Sharon, is, "Well, that shouldn't be hard. You didn't marry him." And she was like, "Well, Deidre, I actually did." Sharon says, "Actually." Because she actually just thought all that happened was the Mexican ceremony. She didn't realize that they got officially married. And so what she gives Deidre's advice to Sharon at that point, Sharon says to Deidre, "I don't have any money left. Tommy mentioned my money." Deidre's response is, "Don't worry. I know lawyers and paralegals. I'll find a pro bono defense attorney." She says that Sharon had relayed, "I had him on the house, but I took him off." And Sharon says, "There's a life insurance policy on my life." And Deidre says to me that, in my opinion, that was a red flag. And when I heard that the life insurance policy, the advice that she gave Sharon at that point was, "Sharon, I want you to come with me and stay with me. I want you to be safe." And Sharon's response to Deidre was, "I don't want to leave my home." And Deidre says, "I can't force you, but I want you to be safe. But please be aware, don't take any food or drink or beverages from him." So that is a conversation 1 week before the murder. I think that elicits Sharon's existing state of mind. on this. All of that time-wise is incredibly relevant. And again, to me, an important thing is, once again, there is advice from Deirdre to her friend, come live with me, don't be with him anymore, 1 week before this, because she is really worried, and then 1 week later, Sharon's dead.
This is Tavish Murphy. This is exactly letting the lawyer get up and talk about what Binion said. About 1 week beforehand, Sharon says that there may be some difficulties, according to Ms. Marley, and now we're going to let out this whole conversation. And I think this is completely, or this has been addressed by the Nevada Supreme Court. What is, again, the relevance to the issue of this case, given what she's saying? And the state could argue, well, it goes to the state of mind, well, it goes to Binion's state of mind, that he thought that maybe Sandy Murphy was going to kill him. And that's why he's telling the attorney. He says, if you know something happens to me, make sure that you know that it's Sandy Murphy who's done it. That's the exact same thing. They're just changing the names and changing a little bit of facts, but it's right on point.
All right, I'm going to have my law clerk, my extend pull up the Tavish case for me, because that was not one of the cases that I read this morning. No, she did it for me.
So my recollection of Tavish is the statement is, if something happened to me, you know, I guess like this Sandy Murphy, but it was brought in to show that the victim wasn't suicidal, right? That was sort of the way the court allowed the evidence in. And instead, the Nevada Supreme Court reversed the case because they said the state improperly argued that he was saying, he was sort of prophetic about like what might happen to him. We're not seeking to suggest anything other than this marriage isn't going well. Both sides are not, everybody's mentioning divorce. Things are rocky. They're rocky right up at the time of the murder. And I do not understand how that would not be relevant in a case like this, where we have alleged a conspiracy between the husband and the person who ultimately kills Sharon Randolph. I mean, we're talking about what the state of the marriage was. All the friends give this advice out. This is what their perception is. But Sharon Randolph's state of mind, that she's not happy in the marriage, that the marriage isn't smooth sailing at that moment, is relevant in terms of establishing a motive for the conspiracy.
Okay, I'm going to read the Tavish case, and I'm going to get back to you after lunch on that one.
And Tavish relies upon Schultz, which Ms. Weckerly did send to the court. And it does say that it has to be relevant to the crime, the state of mind to the crime. And it just isn't at all. And you notice they're saying, well, it was only a week before, but about 20 minutes ago, Mr. Hemner was telling us why 2.5 years before was just as relevant. So what they're doing is just muddying up the waters. It's almost like a divorce proceedings. They are fighting here, they're fighting there. And all these different sort of gossipy conversations that these people come up with after the fact is irrelevant to the case charged, and under both Schultz and Tavish, it is inadmissible.
Okay.
Again, Ron, this is not muttering up the
letters. Well, no, I thought you had another conversation.
Oh.
Because you two will argue about this till lunch is over.
That's probably true.
Yes, so we've heard argument. I'm going to read Tavish and back to you. I thought you had another conversation.
I think it would be similar. I don't think anything is as significant as kind of the ones that are through Deirdre. I mean, there's a friend in Victoria, but I think even if that's the court's ruling, if there's advice being given, I think that'll be fine.
If there's something that they said to her, they can testify about what they said.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
So I'll read Tavish. I'll be back to you guys on that at lunch. After lunch.
Thank you.
What time do you want us back?
Your Honor, I want to alert the court that... if the court's ruling is that some of these conversations are coming in, there's some sexual conversations through Victoria, sexual conversations that I before I say it in front of a jury, I would want to address it to the court, because it's the same type of thing. I just don't want to say it, and because it's a little disparaging, and so it's something that one of their witnesses, who they just mentioned,
Victoria?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then what we'll do is when we come back from lunch, you guys can take this witness on the cross. If there's any redirect, I'll let the jurors ask questions, whatever that goes on. Is Deidre the next witness?
No.
No.
Victoria's going to be called before her?
No, Mr. Byer.
Michael Byer.
Okay.
Husband.
Before Victoria hits the stand, then we can address it. Make sure you remind me. We'll take a break and we'll address that outside.
Yes. Thank you,
Josh.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.